This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
Kate Burridge, Professor of Linguistics at Monash University. Hello, Kate.
Good morning. How are you?
So, Kate, do you think that euphemisms are a good idea?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think when you say the word euphemism, it does bring to mind this kind of, I suppose, deliberately befuddling language, you know, weasel words and doublespeak. And that's the dishonest euphemism. In a sense, all euphemisms are dishonest. They kind of, you know, don't tell it like it is. But
a kinder sort of language.
It's what, sorry?
Is it a kinder sort of language?
Well, yes, that's right, because it's disguising disagreeable reality. It's just that sometimes many euphemisms have this kind of added dimension of guile and secrecy, and, you know, they seem to be deliberately befuddling. So they are the more dishonest euphemism. That's what people have in mind, I think, when you say the word euphemism. And it's led to this kind of deterioration of the word euphemism itself, I think.
Because I got really angry listening to the radio the other day, because I was listening to, I can't remember if it was a politician or it was one of these people talking about the challenges that they have.
Yes.
And it was a really serious subject, but he kept on referring to them as challenges, and I was thinking, this isn't a challenge. This is something that is far greater than a challenge. This is a really big problem that you have. But they refused to say problem, and they would just say challenges and issues.
Trying to put a good spin on it.
Yeah.
That's right.
I guess that's an example of the dishonest way of using it.
That's right. It's what did Orwell say once? You know, language designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable. And I think then he said to give the appearance of solidity to pure wind. It's this kind of deliberately befuddling.
I guess the other one that I find distasteful is the use of the term collateral damage.
Yeah, the loss of human life becomes collateral damage. Yeah, yes.
And this is the issue with certain people, I guess, within establishment not wanting to sound like that there are major problems or that they've done something bad.
That's right. Yeah, it's we associate it with politicians and with advertisers, but we all need euphemisms. I mean, what would life be like if we said exactly what was on our minds and in the most plain terms? It'd be really unbearable, really. It'd be hell on earth.
I mean, some really nice little examples. Robbo from Northern Queensland said, because people don't go to the toilet, although especially, because I didn't quite understand what Americans meant by going to the bathroom, because I couldn't work out why they keep on going to the bathroom all the time, and they just got a problem saying toilet.
Well, that's right, and you've hit the nail on the head, because, of course, what happens to euphemisms is that they eventually deteriorate, so the next generation learns the euphemism as the direct term, because, of course, it's the concept that will just sort of bubble away underneath, undermining the sort of sweetness of the euphemism. So latrine turns into water closet that turns into toilet, which was once itself a euphemism, a sweet-sounding French word that meant little cloth, and then little cloth turns into washroom and bathroom. It goes, you know. It's this kind of endless treadmill, really.
And loo.
That was another one.
Yeah, because I could never work out why people... But I couldn't work out what was offensive about the word toilet.
Well, it's a bit direct, I suppose, to some people.
For goodness sake, I just want to go to the toilet.
I put a positive spin on toilet. Well, that's the thing. It's sort of, you know, it's a kind of verbal escape hatch, I suppose, that we create to respond to a taboo. And these include things that we have trouble with, like death, disease, you know, private parts, bodily function, sex, you know, you name it. And these have been going on for centuries.
Oh, I wonder how many euphemisms there are for sex. All you have to do is listen to songs.
Oh, there are thousands. I mean, there are 2,500 terms for male and female sex organs. You know, people think the Eskimos have a lot of words for snow. In fact, they don't have that many, and why wouldn't they have quite a few? But, you know, look at the richness in the English language, for goodness sake.
Julian, good morning.
Yes, good morning. One I use, it seems to drive some people crazy, and particularly like regarding a football match. If you talk about their team and they want to know the score, you just say, well, they came second.
Oh, you'd get up my nose something shocking.
Yeah, I do it and enjoy it.
because they lost, for goodness sake.
Yeah, but it's just a nicer way of saying you're a loser. You know, they came second.
I don't know if there's a nice way of saying you're a loser, just quite.
suggesting that, well, you just learned something, Trevor. You say I came second.
Thank you very much. Apparently a user, a US carrier captain, called nuclear warheads specials.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite common, I think, with and ones in earlier wars, you know, where, I mean, tank was a euphemism, really, if you think about it.
Yeah. Was tank one as well?
Mm.
1-300-800-222, as we take a look at euphemisms, what they are, how we use them, the ones that you like or don't like. Chucky, good morning.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm well.
What you're talking about with the euphemisms is exactly what original political correctness really was. It enabled politicians to say things, and this is the connection back to politics, right? It enabled politicians to say things to have a nuanced meaning. And it was interesting that you mentioned the one with collateral damage, because that was the absolute classic, where, you know, you could undertake a military exercise and you'll say, well, the object of the exercise is this and that, you know. And whilst we hope that there isn't, there may be some collateral damage.
Yeah.
And then, of course, after the event and there's 50,000 people killed, you then say, yes, but, you know, as you realise, we did say there was likely to be collateral damage.
Yeah, not that people were going to die.
No. No, of course not. But, you see... That's the euphemism. The euphemism of collateral damage, right, enabled you to be politically correct. You didn't lie. You didn't sort of, well, you sort of kind of misled, right?
Yeah.
And that's the political correctness. You are correct. You didn't lie. You didn't cheat. And you know, John Howard did it all the time, by the way. You know?
But I don't want to single out any politicians because they all do it.
No, but, I mean, every politician does it.
Yeah, and that's almost what political speak is. I'm not sure about political correctness. I still don't quite know what political correctness is, Kate.
I think this is more general, but I don't think people, you know... Public opinion isn't as manipulated as, you know, George Orwell's Newspeak might have suggested, you know, in the novel 1984. But there's plenty of evidence, linguistic evidence, that shows that, you know, this kind of loaded language can influence people's memory and their perception. And it does help to, in the case of something like collateral damage or, you know, the dreadful euphemism, soft skin targets and surgical strikes and, you know, friendly fire, these all do downplay and help to kind of minimise feelings of responsibility. And they do sort of, they do downplay the slaughter of human beings, don't they, and create this kind of psychological distance. Well, they help, you know, people get away with their dirty deeds, really.
Yeah, well, that's right. But sometimes I wonder whether or not they realise that we're not that silly.
Yeah. I mean, we're not fooled.
Because we hear it all the time with ethnic cleansing being used instead of genocide. Mm. I mean, we're using some very negative ones here. Mm. Euthanized being put to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many of them. But in some ways, things like put to sleep and when people die, using other phrases, sometimes it's okay to make things a bit gentler.
Well, that's right. You know, someone used it yesterday, pass or pass away, and that's been a euphemism, strangely, that's been in the language since about the 1400s. Most euphemisms, as I mentioned earlier, deteriorate, but that one's been a stayer, and I'm not sure, I haven't been able to chart whether it goes, you know, has gone away and then come back again and be recreated, but normally they turn into, well, dysphemisms, the opposite, you know, offensive language, or they disappear altogether.
Okay, one of the ones that I found, and I had a listener actually ring up and tell me not to use it, was when somebody had died and they were referred to as lost.
Yes, I stopped using that because I used to work in a hospital and it was a bit. We did used to occasionally lose patients when they'd go wandering, you know. Mm. So it was genuinely confusing when someone said they'd lost someone. Exactly. Mm.
And that must be one of the things with euphemisms quite a bit. Some people will find some offensive and not others offensive, and it can be a very personal thing in some ways.
Mm. Mm. Yes, that's right.
Alan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you going?
Yes, Alan.
The one that really irritates me is our economy is in transition. but look, perhaps it's in recession and we need to do deficit spending. You know, that could be the truth.
The thing is, with a statement like that, I mean, our economy is in transition. I mean, things are always in transition.
Look, it was originally used as a transition between a communist system and a capitalist system. When Russia was actually turned capitalist, that was supposed to be an economy in transition. That was the original definition of it.
Mm.
But we're not in that situation here. And look, you can claim our economy is in transition in Australia. Transition to what? Like, seriously, where are we going? Look, there has been no answers.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the politics of it, Alan, but thank you, because that's another good example, I guess, of where a euphemism starts, Kate, and then it goes into general language.
That's right, and it shows one of the most common strategies for creating these is to get a very, usually very nebulous, very vague sort of word like transition can be used in all sorts of contexts. So or another very effective strategy is long-windedness. One of my favourite euphemisms is one I saw in I can't remember where it was that I read it, where traffic jams became localised capacity deficiencies. You know.
Because the transition one is a good example of using a statement that sounds very grand, but it actually means nothing.
Yes, because you hope that you're transitioning to a good place somewhere.
What's Donald Trump's hat say all the time now? Was it a better America?
Oh yeah, well that's
making America great again.
When you said better or greater, that's a very a sneaky grammatical device that for euphemism, and that's a bit like the year of the older person. You know, now older should be older than old, but it's not in the area of euphemism. It makes it blurry. It blurs the edges. It's a bit like the advertiser that says, you know, our oranges are sweeter. You sort of think, well, sweeter than what? Sweeter than lemons? You know, when there's no sort of standard of comparison, it can mean anything.
And that's the whole idea.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Jeremy, good morning.
I'm on Trevor. I wanted to ask Kate whether something like the names that we give to various types of meat would be classed as a euphemism. My daughter recently became vegan, and that sort of raised a few issues around the way we slaughter animals and what have you. And I was just thinking, we call pig meat pork, and we call it bacon, and we call lamb, but We'll call meat all sorts of different kinds of names.
Possibly. And they're all French.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a good point, though, because we'll refer to rump steak. We don't call it as the meat that comes off the backside of a cow.
That's right. Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it's interesting. The only parts of the animal that we give the sort of English terms to are the kind of inferior cuts that probably people don't eat these days, like calf's foot jelly or, you know, or pig's tail. It's interesting, when you eat the tail or a trotter, it's a pig rather than pork. Pork trotter doesn't sound quite right.
No.
But it's a pig trotter, and that's the English word.
Oh, so do we mainly use French language for
meat? As soon as it's turned into food, it's French, and that goes back centuries.
I mean, that sounds much better because it's got that beautiful French accent.
That's right.
Nothing can sound bad in French.
Pork tenderloin, pig tenderloin doesn't sound quite right. Tenderloin, you know,
John, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Kate, one of the ones that I'll use a euphemism to start, it gets my goat, is this new thing that people use a lot, going forward or moving ahead.
Instead of what, John?
I don't know. Are we afraid of saying in the future?
It's true, isn't it? But that's another one like toilet. What's wrong with saying in the future?
It seems as though no one wants to say it. Every time something's used, it's either moving, you know, in the moving forward or going ahead.
Yeah, and that's one of those baffling ones, Kate.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, in some respects, it's everybody likes to come up with different ways of saying things, and that's what drives so much language change, is we're always trying to come up with new exciting ways of saying things. Things become mundane and they're replaced. And in vocabulary, it's just enormous turnover all the time. But it's just in these areas where then they become, I suppose they turn into what sometimes called a lexical zombie, the kind of living dead, you know, these cliches that get so overused that they do themselves in.
I like a lovely point from BC who says, I don't like politicals using polities using sporting terms, which I guess is a euphemism within itself. Captains like kicking captain's call, kicked a goal, on the front foot, a home run, touching base, all of those sorts of things as well.
Yeah, but we've always stolen from sporting terms, you know, even lifting your game and all those level playing fields and, you know, look at the cricket terms, it's not cricket and all those things. They're in general use. But you're right. I mean, we do draw on sporting terminology a lot in the political arena. I mean, there's arena.
Politicians are always... I know we're picking on politicians a bit here, but, you know, who cares?
Oh, they're fair game, aren't they?
But they're either wanting to sound cleverer than us or the same as us. But when they want to sound the same as us, they tend to use sporting terms or terms that are supposed to be very, you know, grassrootsy, which is probably a euphemism in itself, or very, very clever things that they think that will baffle us.
It's when they suddenly start using Aussie-isms like their shake or suck at the sauce bottle.
Yeah. Yeah. And generally wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I checked their shake of the sauce bottle, and that's actually been around quite a long time.
Oh, is it really?
Yes, because I think it's, you know, because fair suck of the sauce bottle is, the sauce bottle is, you know, alcohol wrapped in, you know, we should pass around the bottle of alcohol. But I think perhaps in that case, because it was I can't remember the name of the politician who first used it, but it was in the 1990s, I think, and probably I wanted the idea of kind of a dollop of tomato sauce rather than maybe a safer image for a politician. I don't know.
Actually, Campbell in Newcastle has asked, is euthanasia a euphemism in itself, or is it a scientific explanation for the act?
I wouldn't call it. Well, that's the thing, you know, it depends on context with whether you say something's a euphemism or not, or even an offensive term, doesn't it? These things aren't intrinsically euphemistic or intrinsically offensive. In that case, it seems like the direct term to me, the sort of the scientific term. But that can be used euphemistically. Mercy killing is another example. But it will depend on context. I mean, we're talking about death now. Something like peg out. Now, that would seem like an offensive term to say someone pegged out. But, you know, I find the term on occasion die a bit too blunt, a bit too direct. Peg out can be kind of more humorous. It's a bit frivolous. And it can be kind of euphemistic in that sense. It's a term to avoid the very blunt term die.
Well, the same with kick the bucket.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if a physician were to inform, you know, the bereaved that their loved one had pegged out, that would be offensive. But, you know, ordinary folk like me and you can use it in a euphemistic way. So it really does depend on the context and who's speaking to whom, if it's a good mate or not, or, you know.
And the relationship that you have depends on how they come across.
Yeah.
Anthony, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, Anthony.
Look, I just wanted to raise the one that's most blatant is quantitative easing, which is the euphemism for printing money, which is an economic sin. And the wonderful Americans, you know, invented this term so that they could print money and make it seem like they were doing something highly technical.
And also make it an expression that most people aren't going to know what it means.
Yeah. Well, covering their hind parts, let's say.
Well, and there are plenty of euphemisms for that.
And it raises an interesting linguistic phenomenon. I don't know whether we've talked about genital flip-flop before on this program, but, you know, sometimes you take a very general term. I mean, a groin would be a very good example. You know, where's the groin exactly? And so you take a very general area and use it for a specific body part that you'd rather not name. But, of course, you know, a few centuries later, or people aren't quite sure which, you know, body part that one refers to. So the classic example is fanny. You know, that was a nickname, and it means something different in American English to Australian English.
So completely different.
Yes, that's right. Yes, and this is a very common throughout many languages will show this kind of genital flip-flop where the words will switch around.
Sorry, was flip-flop a euphemism in itself?
Sorry.
Jeff, good morning.
Yeah, g'day, mate. What annoys me is, you know, when people think they say, oh, they've had a turn. You know, that expression, oh, she's had a turn, or...
Oh, look, Jeff, I'm with you totally, because when
what's
somebody...
It mean?
Well, that's right, and but when you're on the receiving end of somebody saying to you, oh, they've had a turn, you sort of sit there and go, you don't really have a clue what happened.
Yeah.
Like, does that mean that you've fainted? Does it mean that you threw up?
Chucked
a wobbly, or you actually just turned around a couple of times?
Which way? I mean, what's it mean? It's a silly word.
It is a silly word, but it's used a lot, Kate.
It is, yes. Good example.
Because I always wondered, you know, because you always hear people saying, oh, somebody had a fall, which is a euphemism in itself, because you don't want to say they fell over.
No, it's interesting. It's only when you become a woman or a man of a certain age that you then start to have a fall. Up until that time, you're cheerfully falling.
Yeah, what age do you reckon it is?
I don't know. I'm waiting for it.
You see, I'm worried when I fall over that someone's going to say, oh, Trevor had a fall. And I'm going to be going, no, I didn't.
I fell over.
I fell over and I might fall over again. And I won't be having a fall until I'm at least 83. Glenno, good morning.
Good morning, Trevor.
How old do you reckon it is that you have a fall?
Oh, mate, I stumble every quarter mile, I reckon.
I kick my toes a lot lately. I wonder if you get older, you don't lift your feet up as high.
Oh, always on the toes, on the balls of my feet. Mm. What really gets up my nose is when you call any of these call centres for utilities or something, and they say, this call will be recorded for training and quality purposes.
What do they really mean?
We're going to record you and stick a pineapple up you if you can prove that we've done something wrong. And, you know, they then go and say, now, we've got to identify you, and so you've got to give everything from your date of birth, your full name, your address, your phone number. But if you turn around and say, okay, now, I want to record down for record purposes, what's your full name, please? They won't tell you.
No, of course not. But that's a euphemism in itself, Kate, that idea that we're saying that we're recording you for training purposes.
Mm.
Yeah, but you're not.
It's one of those underhand ones.
Yeah, we know what you're doing. You're wanting to record me swearing at you and getting angry because I'm not getting what I want, and then we can get back at you later.
So cynical, Trevor.
That's what they do. They'll write it. I reckon they've got a little note. They've got, and I'm not saying that this is me because it's not me, but they've got Trevor Chappell. Right. We've got a little couple of black crosses next to his name. And here's the evidence of how he gets grumpy. Grumpy's a good one.
Grumpy's a great word.
Mm. Because that's a euphemism.
Well, in under certain circumstances, yes. That's right.
For just a bad-tempered person.
Yes, right.
And that's maybe one that you use about yourself. That's a good point. Can you use euphemisms a lot about yourself to make yourself sound bad?
Oh, most certainly, yes. And understatement is a good euphemistic strategy too.
Yeah. Give me an example of understatement.
Oh, how many drinks have you had? A couple?
Yes. Actually, there'd be lots of how many euphemisms are there for being drunk?
Oh, yes. Well, they're probably, they're the dysphemistic euphemisms because they cluster at the colloquial end, smash, slosh. There are hundreds, Trevor, hundreds and hundreds.
I reckon there are probably more euphemisms about getting drunk than for sex bits of... Yes, we know what
we mean. 2,500. We've got to beat. That's a fair figure.
There must be a whole bucket.
I did see a figure of 2,000, and that was a while ago. So we've probably got, quite a few hundred more since.
Sloshed, smashed. John, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Yeah, no, I just think the word politician, political, is a euphemism in its own right.
In what way? Because what are they covering?
Yeah,
disagreeable reality.
A disagreeable reality in itself. Thank you, John.
I mean, politician was a positive term once and then deteriorated badly. We're talking centuries ago when it came to mean, well, it's probably still means it, a sort of crafty, sneaky, I can't think of the definition in Samuel Johnson's dictionary of 1700s. It's but really a negative word. And then it climbed out of this and became positive again, but it's done. It has lost its semantic halo now, well and truly.
Really, Bill Steemsavel has pointed out, one of the things I hated from a previous corporate life was key performance indicators, KPIs.
They still have them, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how it's a euphemism. Maybe it's really just a way of saying we're checking up on you.
Yeah, that's right. I think the euphemistic sheen is gone now. We know what these KPIs are, even when you abbreviate it to KPI, and they're not nice.
Glenn has brought up one of my favourite euphemisms of all time, is that when you like that some dogs go to the farm.
Oh yes.
Go to a very special farm.
Very special farm.
For any children that are out there, they do go to a very special farm when they're naughty. Dogs. And if you're wondering what that means and you still believe in the very special farm, I'm sorry. Riley, good morning.
Good morning, CC and Kate. How are you there?
Good. Did you ever have a dog that went to the special farm?
No. Well, fortunately, I didn't, CC.
Good. I did, but I'm still going to counselling about it, so we won't talk about it.
Fair enough. Quick question. I always say, and having a little bit of experience in Italian, Spanish, Portuguese and French, that English is the most descriptive language on the planet. We've got so many words in our dictionary. Would I be correct in saying that, Katie?
Well, we've got a lot of words. I've seen counts of a million, and there's clearly a lot more than that. I think the interesting thing about English is that we've pinched so many words from other languages that, well, a bit like we were describing earlier, where you've got the English words are the kind of ordinary, everyday ones in the case of, you know, meat and food, and then the French and the Italian provide this kind of posh overlay of a bit higher style, and then at the top you've got the Latin and the Greek, and they're these kind of stylistic layers in English. You know, a bit like, I don't know, quack is English, doctor is French, and physician is Latin, or something like that. You know, it gives a certain richness.
And I'm glad that there are euphemisms for diarrhea. I was wondering if somebody just sent a text.
That's right.
So, although Oti in Ripley said, I know, it just makes me feel sick. Sometimes the euphemism for diarrhea is actually worse than the actual word itself.
Except you don't, the thing with diarrhea is I can't spell it.
See, bro, no, I don't want to read. See, he said liquid sit downs is another phrase for diarrhea, which makes me feel a little bit sick.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a little bit too descriptive, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
So sometimes euphemisms aren't as good as the real word.
I wouldn't even call that one a euphemism. I think that evokes the reality a little too bluntly.
It's just yuck. Another example of a euphemism where you're not sure exactly what it means is Justin said, I asked my dad how mum is, and she said she was a little bit under the weather. I said, can you let me know when she's over the weather? And he said, yeah, she's sick of the rain. The thing is there, though, under the weather can either mean sick or it could be a hangover or it could be a few things.
Well, that's right. And then, again, it's used in that understatement way. So you're understate, you know, if you're really quite crook, it tempers it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, even the word disease, look at that, means, you know, dis-ease, you're not at ease. I mean, that was a euphemism itself, and that comes to be the direct term.
Get out.
Yeah, if you think about the parts of that word.
Yeah, so it was so not at ease, and so that's where disease comes from.
And look, an area of that is where you get this classic turnover is in mental illness, and that shows you that there are still, you know, enormous taboos surrounding that because these words will just keep shifting. You know, something like sane or insane. I mean, sane just meant healthy, so you could be sane in all parts of your body or insane, and then it narrows. And to, you know, mental health alone, and even going mental. I mean, mental used to mean, you know, obviously pertaining to the mind, but it's this, you know, constant narrowing of meaning that you get in taboo areas. You know, the things that go bump in the night, the things we don't want to talk about, the things we can't face up. We use this kind of deodorant language, these linguistic fig leaves, but they wear out, of course.
Yeah, true. Ian, good morning.
Good morning. Well, it gets me is at this point in time. one up now.
Yeah, and that's the Ian. Thank you, because sometimes they're almost a sentence to where you could just use one word.
But don't you have these? I know they get up your nose, and I know they become, you know, overused. But we all need these little kind of breathing spaces. Particularly you must, Trevor, as a broadcaster, at times where you sort of pad it out a bit to give you some thinking time.
You don't tell everyone that, Kate.
They'll be listening for yours now.
Thanks for that. Do you know what I do? I give the phone number.
Oh, that's
or I'll, good. I'll give the time for a little bit of a breather. Lynn, good morning.
Good morning. In London a few years ago, there was a train cancelled due to bovine intervention. It hit a cow.
Bovine intervention's a beauty.
Bovine intervention.
Thank you, Lynn.
Bye.
Because there are other ones like that. Vertically challenged, Kate. There's quite a few of those.
I think some of them are just created for a bit of fun. I think we do have a lot of fun with euphemism.
Oh, so that's true.
Yeah.
Bob joins us. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, guys.
Yes.
That's good. I've heard a lot of them. I've been listening since it started. And I'm just thinking that once we get to the most important ones, when you break up, they go, it's not you, it's me.
That's such a good example.
I couldn't hear that one. What was that
Bob
one?
Was saying when you break up with someone and they go, it's not you, it's me. So really what they're saying, it is you.
It's all about you.
It's all about you. And I don't want to be here anymore. But we'll say something else to try and make you feel better.
Well, that's right. It's all meant to make us feel better.
But it doesn't. We're still going to be depressed for a while.
Yes.
Alan, good morning.
How you going?
Yes, Alan.
There's the one that took a turn or chucked a backen.
Chucked a backen?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
He might have fainted off, took a bad turn.
Oh, you see, these are really interesting because we start to move away from euphemisms, Kate, into what?
Well, this is slang. It's it can be used euphemistically if it just, you know, it disguises unpleasant reality, and it's flippancy towards something that's fearful is a way of coping with it. So yeah. it can be euphemism.
Slang, because slang can be within itself.
That's right. So slang and euphemism and also offensive, they all intersect, and it does depend on the context. A bit like the peg out example earlier, you know, he carked it. Depending on, you know, if it's between good mates, that can be euphemistic.
Peter, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Trevor.
Yes, Pete.
One of the things that really gets up my nose is I'm a regional country person. I've lived in a regional country all my life, and you often hear politicians saying they're going to the bush. Now, you know, the bigger country areas like Wagga, where I actually live, that's not in the bush, but you often hear politicians saying they're going out to the bush, which really gets up my nose.
Yeah, and it's fair enough too, because it's almost, I don't know if patronising is the right way of putting it, but it's not true.
No, it's not true. We're not bushies, you know, we live in a civilised country. It's like they're going out and we've still got corks around the tops of our hats and all got periscopes.
All those good blokes and bonza sheilas.
But Peter, do you reckon it's that's politicians thinking that they're sounding like the people that they're going to see?
Exactly. They think that they're coming out and trying to relate to the bushies out. You know, it's just not true.
Yeah, because they think that if you're from regional or country areas in Australia, that's the term that you use.
Yeah, and I can guarantee you we don't all call ourselves bushies.
No, or that you don't, that you would say, yeah, I'm going out the bush. But the thing is that you've got main streets, traffic lights, large buildings and large populations.
They're going out to regional Australia.
And when you're going to the you're going to the city, you'd be saying that you're going the Big Smoke, wouldn't you, Pete?
Not really.
No. Good on you. Thank you.
If I'm going to the city, I'll go to the city.
That's exactly right. Kate, this is a very good example of how it can become offensive.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I agree. Mm.
And I wonder whether or not these things are all thought up by marketing departments, groups of politicians sitting around and having think tanks about how we can actually come up with a purpose. in the term.
And it's a bit like with the fair shake of a sauce bottle too. It just seems so deliberate and so planned and
yes.
And just falls flat, really.
Imagine if you were the one that said, okay, this would be the way to go. Why don't you say fair shake of the sauce bottle and everyone will think that you're really one of us.
Yeah, that's right.
Without knowing exactly what's going to happen. Kate, it's great talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Trevor.
Kate Burridge, Professor of Linguistics at Monash University.